Don't worry about it. It's my show. Can you imagine some like that happening? All right. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2.
What's up, everybody? This is the Red Band Podcast, your source for all film and TV related news and topics. I am your host, Anthony King. And with me tonight, of course, is my co-host,
Adrian G. Fuentes.
And of course, sitting in the control room is our technical director, Mike Cards.
Welcome back, everybody.
Yeah, look at that. He finally said something.
Yeah, see, I wasn't going to try and figure out something, you know,
on the spot or clever or cheeky.
Yeah, nothing like finger guns or like, you know, fucking reveal. No, I'm not going to do. No.
It's like the last 4 or 5 episodes in a row. Just got like a blank stake mic. Just blare, like just blankly just staring.
Just freezing. Yeah. Just freezing into the camera.
Yeah. I don't know what to do. I panicked.
Just pissed my pants.
How you guys doing tonight?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty solid.
Christmas is closer. It's getting closer. It's approaching, man. Dude, you guys got Christmas plans?
Yeah, and it's fucking hitting my wallet just.
You know, we actually did a pretty good thing this year. We did Secret Santa for everyone. Mm. So we put all of each other's names in like a draw, and then whatever name you drew is the presents that you get for that person. Because like our immediate family, like Ash's immediate family side is too big to try and get much presents, and then my family, and then so it's easier.
Too much.
It's just too much. So maybe for the kids, you get an extra present or so. But for the adults, you know, one present for whoever you're getting.
Yeah, no, I get it. This Christmas is definitely going to be hurting everyone's wallets.
Yeah.
Definitely trying to buy everything for everyone. And just, it's just too many. It's too many people. Yeah. New nephews being born, new nieces, just more people.
I know.
You know more people, then it's just more gifts piling up.
Luckily, you don't really have to get them really anything until they're like maybe 5.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just mostly clothes.
No, it is all what clothes. What you do?
The cheat code to that is buy something in a bundle pack and cut that bitch up and just pass it out.
Yep. Ooh. Absolutely.
Dude, likes Hot Wheels. Buy a 5-pack of Hot Wheels and there you go.
Or even like if you buy clothes, buy them like 3 sizes up. So that way it's like, oh yeah, that one time purchase that you spent like $100 on, that's going to last you for like 2-3 years.
We'll watch you grow into that. Perfect.
Look at that. Amazing.
And just one final thing on that. For if you hate someone and they have small kids, loud instruments.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, absolutely perfect. Here's the loudest toys.
A recorder, a drum set, something.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is, of course, episode is not covering over our Christmas shopping or what's going to be covering over Christmas or anything related. What we're going to talk about tonight is actually something that was just recently released, Secret Level.
Yeah.
The new PlayStation video game anthology from Amazon.
Fantastic show, by the way.
Mike just wants to get it out of the record now that he loves it before we hop into it, because boy, there are some heated arguments with that. Not with us directly, but it's interesting how we're going to point out the difference between the critic reviews and audience reviews.
You mean gamer fans and fucking fakes? Go watch Baby Deer, you fucking losers.
But before we hop into that, of course, let's just cover over the smaller film news topics that we got here. So let's just go straight into this. First, what we have here, Sesame Street is dropped by HBO Warner Brothers and now has to shop around. That hurts a little.
It does.
HBO shouldn't have bought them to begin with.
Yeah, they really shouldn't have.
No.
They didn't have the money or the finances to keep up with it.
No.
I mean, okay, I said this before we started was, we all know that Sesame Street is not a financial successful show.
Yeah, it's not financially profitable.
No, it's not. It's been on TV for such a long time that it's just kind of belongs there.
Yeah.
Like I said, I haven't watched this thing in years. But if they cancel, I'm going to be pissed.
Well, it was like what I was talking about beforehand. It's like PBS is not profitable,
no.
I'll say.
No, it's not meant to be kind of profitable.
It's been in television for so long. It just keeps its place.
I mean, the idea of it is it's public broadcasting station.
Yeah.
So it's not meant to be like this powerhouse conglomerate.
Mm-hmm.
It's just to be a free station, you know? Like if you were a kid and you couldn't afford cable, but you still wanted something educational, shit, the whole purpose of Sesame Street's origin was so that way kids could still be able to learn when they're not in school.
Yeah.
And HBO was like, hell yeah, buy it and put Ice Cube on it. Like, fuck it. Like, I know they have different celebrities.
Yeah, to come on appear. It, yeah, yeah.
But like, at some point, they were just like,
you knew it wasn't about it being a public broadcast channel for children. It was more like, how much money could we rack out of these children?
I mean, it should have been, honestly, the first sign should have been the introduction of Rocco.
Yeah.
Fucking Elmo doesn't like Rocco. Do you know Rocco?
I've heard about it. I haven't like.
Well, the idea is that they have a character on there that's autistic. So it's like, okay. A kid that could, it's not heavily autistic.
Yeah.
But there's traits
yeah.
that show visually. So it's like, oh, okay, this is supposed to connect. This can connect with other kids who, you know, have autism. And so this kid whose best friend is a rock calls him Rocco. Elmo doesn't get it. Elmo's like, but it's a rock. And he's like, no, it's a friend Rocco. And everyone's like, Elmo's just like, you know, everyone just say hi to Rocco. Rocco. Elmo, just say hi. Oh, hi, yeah. Rocco. And so his overall beef with this rock is just that
he doesn't get it.
He doesn't get it. It's a rock, right? And so it just pisses him off to the point to where it's like, oh my, you probably heard the sound like, hi, Chucky Sue, hi. Or like he's saying hi, good morning, everything. Yeah. And the kid's like, say hi to Rocco, Elmo. Hi, Rocco. So that should have already been an indicator that this was going downhill. HBO didn't know what they were doing.
I mean, I just feel like the actor who's played for Elmo personally had a vendetta against this. He's like, no, I'm not putting up with this shit.
I'm not this doesn't make sense.
It's a fucking rock.
It's a rock. I don't get it. He fucking hated it. And then recently, Elmo did an interview with Soa, and they brought up Rocco. And he wasn't mad, but he was just like, it's, you know, it's not my concern. Like, well, I don't need to worry about Rocco. I don't need to worry about the rock. That's what his whole thing was. It's an interesting lore. But HBO has been paying $150 million a year alone just to keep the rights to be able to use
it. Yeah. And honestly, it needs to stay around.
And no, I'm not saying to ever dismantle it. Mm-hmm. Ever. Yeah. No.
Who do you expect to pick it up, though? Because someone is going to pick it up.
I mean, back to PBS?
Either back to PBS or maybe
God Amazon.
Amazon, are you?
Yeah. I feel like it would be Amazon
pick it up. It doesn't matter who picks it up. What I realized is no matter who picks it up, Sesame Street Workshop has full control over everything no matter what.
No, yeah, no, absolutely.
They do not allow anyone to interfere with their work. Mm-hmm. So if whoever grabs the show, they have to stick to their rules.
Yeah.
Because they cannot deviate from what they've created.
They have a core value of what they're meant for, and they're not going to derail from that.
Yeah. So they're not going to stick advertisement inside there. They're not going to do, what's it called? Product placement.
Any of that stuff. Yeah. They're going to keep the format the same. It's just basically who's picking up the bill.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
They're not going to have Big Bird drink like Fiji water or something.
Be like, wow, this Fiji with only 15% and just like name off
its stats. Like, no, I don't see Snuffleupagus talking about how Del Taco's old new Crunchwrap Supreme knockoff is so fantastic. Like, no, I don't ever see that.
Nah, they won't. So whoever grabs the bill is going to be keeping it the same.
Yeah.
Yo, how accurate was that Big Bird voice, though?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Was it pretty accurate?
Nah.
I kind of scared myself a little bit.
All right, going over our next topic, what we have here. Netflix is walking back its generous parental leave policy after too many workers take a full year off.
Okay, but what is the policy?
So basically the policy is you're basically allowed anywhere between 8 months to a year off with your first child's birth.
Okay.
So it's well past generally the standard for the Family and Medical Leave Act. So what, they only give you about like 12 to 14 weeks like max for those?
Yeah, it's bullshit.
So that's a well generous extended time.
Yeah.
Now imagine when you get like close to 60% of your staff already willing to be able to take a full year off. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So something they were advertising is like, we're so better than all the other companies. Of course, we're going to have this generous office for our offer for employees. What do you expect? People are going to abuse it. And of course, they're going to have to scale it back.
Yes. Mm. But I mean, they should have the policy for the, you know, work at home as well.
Yeah.
They should have had that. Because I'm pretty sure a lot of the work couldn't be done from the house as well.
No, absolutely can. Absolutely can. But I bet you they weren't even thinking about that. And they're like, hey, we're just going to show off this nice little generous policy for employees.
Just to be like, hey, look how generous we are.
Yeah.
Look how well we take care of our employees.
Yeah. People love working for Netflix, you know?
Yeah.
You get a full year off with your first child's birth. What happens when, like, most of your department's gone at that point?
Jesus. Yeah, that's true.
Or it's not even first child's birth, too, because it's basically any type of medical family emergency leave. And everyone has problems. Everyone's going to have problems.
Yeah. It just depends on the severity, I guess. Or I don't know what their official rollback, how far they're going to roll back. If they're going to roll back all the way to, like, 12 weeks?
I think they might go back to standard, you know, what's federally for the Family and Medical Leave Act.
Damn.
So I think it's just going to be back to the standard 12 to 14 weeks. The only thing they specifically stated is they haven't given a time frame with the new policy. They just stated that you need to speak directly with your manager about it.
Oh, okay.
So it's basically to wash their hands away from, okay, we're giving no designated time. So now we can fluctuate between employee to employee, hear the stories, and then see exactly how much time we want to give them.
Gotcha.
Now I'm looking right now at other countries that have their maternal parental leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, I mean, I don't say there's no average actually, but there's like bringing it by countries, like Finland offers 160 days of parental leave. Damn. Spain, 112. Canada offers 16 weeks with 49% pay. Germany, it's 14 weeks with 100% pay. Mexico is 12 weeks, 100% pay. Right. So,
wow, 100% pay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude.
What?
That's amazing.
Bulgaria offers 410 days of paid mandatory leave, with the first 45 being mandatory.
400 and...
What the hell?
Yeah, 410 days of maternity leave, with the first 45 days being mandatory.
Wait, what country is this?
Bulgaria.
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 Yeah. So if you have a kid, you're mandatory to leave 45 days.
Svidanchi, guys. Let's go. I don't even know if that's the right language.
No.
But you know, I know they're in Harry Potter. I just watched them. You know, they're, you know, Victor Crumb fucking...
So every country has, it looks like they have different weeks or months. But it looks like Netflix kind of overstepped their.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really did.
Yeah, especially with something that's not offered regularly here in the States. Mm-hmm. Of course, people are going to take advantage of that and immediately hop onto that.
Yeah.
All right. Covering over our last bit of film news before we hit our main topic. CinemaCon is coming up next year. And we have a newcomer who is joining Amazon MGM. It's going to be their first year joining CinemaCon. And of course, we got the return of Sony. Which, how long has Sony been out? Like, right before COVID, right?
Yes.
They've been out of CinemaCon, so it's been years.
Yes.
So, it's nice we're actually seeing, like, a slow build-up return to actual CinemaCon and conventions. It's not like E3, which, like, completely crashed out and died.
Yes. That one's... Yeah, we're never gonna see that again.
That one hurts, how bad it died. But at least we got CinemaCon slowly coming back, and it looks like we're getting actually some of the big heads returning to it. Remember last year, like, everyone dipped out.
Yeah, that's
at the last second.
I forgot about
that. Yeah, remember?
Yeah.
So now it sounds like we are getting a lot of the big heavy hitters returning. Paramount, Lionsgate, Universal, Disney, Warner Brothers. So it looks like we're actually gonna have everyone coming to this event to actually show off what they have.
But here, okay, one question I have is, CinemaCon supposed to be for wide theater releases, right?
Yeah.
I'm looking at Amazon MGM Studios, what their movies are been released or have been released. All these have been streamed, unless they have plans for in the future.
Or do you think CinemaCon's actually opening up for streaming to be a little bit more versatile for because since every big studio is moving into streaming, it's hard to not have a streaming category anymore. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. No, I get it.
Yeah.
But I mean, in this article for Deadline, it is said that Amazon MGM Studios is the only streamer that has ever participated in CinemaCon.
Yeah, like Netflix doesn't participate in this.
Maybe because they weren't allowed to, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like they're not allowed to or they're just not interested because it's not about them.
Because unfortunately for Amazon MGM, it makes sense because MGM was an established studio already.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they probably their way in because of MGM.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure if they're allowing other streaming services on there, like Hulu and, you know.
Well, I was trying to say, keep in mind, though, that this is meant for studios with theatrical releases.
Yeah.
And being that Amazon MGM has had theatrical releases, Netflix and Apple TV haven't. Apple TV was the exception last year, only because they piggybacked off of Paramount's Killer of the Flower
Moon. Yeah, that one, yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, they haven't had any theatrical releases to really announce to say, hey, we're coming to CinemaCon because, you know, we're cinema. No, you're streaming.
Yeah.
You know? So this is MGM's first time. Do you think they're going to be kind of bullied a little bit?
Like, no, because it's MGM.
They're like, but it's like, but it's bought by Amazon. It's like, oh, fucking new guys over here.
No,
fucking
I think it's
streamers.
I mean,
two-day delivery movies.
Oh, fucking prime essential, huh?
No, I do, because it's MGM, I do believe they have already some pre-establishment within this convention.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's like completely new people in charge of MGM since they were bought over from Amazon. Mm-hmm. I think it's mostly still a lot of the same figureheads and CEOs and stuff like that, besides for just now having a bigger oversight with Amazon.
And I mean, MGM did co-produce a lot of films.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
So they are, yeah, they're still a big major co-producer today.
Yeah, so right now I'm looking at their list and there's a lot of films that are coming out in the future that are co-produced. Mm-hmm. And I mean, is Nito going to complain?
I know. What an asshole of a fucking name.
Yeah. Yeah. The fucking National Association of Theater Owners, NATO. You know they did that on purpose.
They 100% did that on purpose.
Like, hey, we're NATO here. We have to approve your films.
They did that for the sole purpose of like, yo, people are going to be Googling NATO a lot because of everything. So like, just imagine if our site becomes the first one they look up. I don't think that's something you want to do.
No.
Especially if there means to look up a specific thing with actual NATO. And they're like, what do you mean that NATO's releasing Sonic the Hedgehog 4?
What?
Huh?
I was thinking about this right now too, is I think I know the reason why they probably not want streamers on the, on their lineup. It's because it makes them look bad. Because remember, there's more viewers watching them on streaming than it is in theaters.
That's very true.
That's a good point.
So they probably won't. That's why they're not allowing them. And MGM's allowed because they have their way in, but not allowing the other ones in.
I'm surprised like Netflix or other streamer platforms haven't tried to develop their own expo.
I think they're playing the waiting game on this one. I think we might start seeing them in like the next 2 years or so.
Mm-hmm. Like StreamFest, StreamCon.
No, not a StreamCon, but showing up at this event.
At CinemaCon.
Yes.
You think they're going to eventually open the doors for streaming?
They're going to have to. There is no way escaping this. Because this was supposed to be a place to show up films that are going to come out pretty soon and what they're going to put in theaters.
Yeah.
But like we talked about last week was, they're all franchises.
Yeah. It's all so franchise.
What new thing are you going to show at this event?
Like what new sequel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very true. That's true.
They're going to try and keep them out of their clubhouse.
Mm-hmm. For as long as possible until they eventually, like I said, everything's moving towards streaming. They're eventually going to have to let them in. They're going to eventually have to accept Netflix is here to stay.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things. Yeah. It will be interesting seeing exactly with this year how Amazon MGM does. Because they will be the actual test to see if they're going to bring on other streaming platforms. You see what I'm saying?
Mm.
I believe this is the test to see if they're going to actually have other streaming services come on.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick break from our sponsor, and when we get back, we're going to cover up our main topic. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back to you guys.
Here are some news articles that couldn't make it in today's episode. First We Feast, including Hot Ones, was sold by BuzzFeed to founder Sean Evans and founder Chris Schoberger for $82.5 million. The Onion's purchase of InfoWars has been blocked by U.S. bankruptcy judge Christopher Lopez, saying that the auction lacked transparency, and Tom Holland launches his first production company, Billy 17, with a signing deal along with Sony Pictures. And that's it. That's all I got for you. Now back to the show.
And we are back, covering over our main topic tonight. Secret Level, the video game anthology released by Amazon, finally released, and boy, reviews have came out, and it's been kind of conflicting with these. We got critics that are being a lot more harsher, which we usually are understandable, and we usually kind of see that going forward with critic reviews. They'll be always a lot more harsher.
Yeah.
But man, the dynamic between critics and audience, was this expected for you guys? Did you guys expect that?
I expected some pushback from critics.
Yeah.
I expected some sort of breakdown from it, of whether it be like story structure or something like that.
Because that's the most common. That critics will always be harsher on films, but they're always looking at things differently than general audience members are, especially with beloved franchises and video games especially. So they're, of course, they're looking at story, acting, development, all that stuff, you know, mise-en-scène, all that bullshit, while audience members just want to be entertained.
Yes.
So there always has been that dynamic, but this one felt a little weird with the difference between the reviews and critics and audience.
These critics have never played any video games.
Not even played the video games, but have a grasp on what they were trying to get, you know, convey to the audience.
Yeah. Like a lot of the reviews we were reading, it felt like, I don't know, like they missed the mark on the purpose of why the show was created.
Yes. These are straight to the point. There is no backstory. There is no building up characters. Like, we're in it. You either you get it or you don't. One or the other.
Yeah. They're shorts. They're shorts. Yeah.
They're shorts. And pretty much the review is like, you know, there's not enough dialogue. There's not enough, you know. What was it, the main complaints?
Some of the main complaints that we had was that they said many of the plots get compelling only in a final few minutes. Or worse, they are recycled versions of scenarios that the audience has seen numerous times.
Like, one of the complaints I was kind of seeing a lot with the critics was that it was very too much focused on the action sequence and not enough dialogue to push the story forward.
Dude.
You ever played a game?
Yeah. No, one. Okay. I don't know how they didn't get, like, the action itself pushed the dialogue forward.
That was the one thing that, like, that is usually the best part when it comes to film and cinema, is when you can actually take a series of different clips, show it together without dialogue, and still understand the plot or what's going on. That's what really makes a movie a movie. So that's usually the general thing as a filmmaker you want to do. You first want to make sure your movie sells by itself visually only.
Yes. Yeah. Now, to show you how, like Dungeons and Dragons, I'm aware of the franchise, obviously. Mm-hmm. We all know who it is.
Yeah.
But I'm not into, like, the lore, the characters. Like, I barely know the actual inner workings.
So, and you're not going to fit all that in 15 minutes.
No. But I understood already what they were trying to convey.
You understood the themes they're trying to convey and the plot happening at the moment.
Yes.
You're a party. You run into a scenario. You decide as a party whether or not to follow with this new line. And you go from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it. And like I said, not as a fan, I'm pretty sure as a fan, you recognize, oh, that person, this person, that those characters, whatever it may be.
That spell, you know, that's all the Easter eggs. There's obviously, it was filled with Easter eggs.
So as a fan, like, I don't understand that, but as a fan, I'll get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I still got the story and I still loved it no matter what.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's where, like, critics are like, you know, pretty much the pinkies up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they said, I don't get it. This doesn't make sense. Who is this elf here? Why does that midget know how to do magic? Why is that dwarf so, like, strong? Why could he shift into... Like, shut the fuck up.
But I don't... Like I said, the biggest complaint I was saying is, like, they really wanted full, complete, open and closed stories within 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even some that were complaining, this felt more like a tech demo or a tech engine. I'm like, yes, this is a tech engine.
Yes.
It's a demo. We are seeing what they are pushing with their computer graphics that's usually the point of these animated anthologies in the first place.
No, but not only that, which I'm looking up right now, it looks like they not only did for a tech demo, but they're pretty much everybody involved was pushing to the absolute limit.
Yeah.
To improve that this, they pretty much put their best effort all around.
There was
it even felt like no one put any laziness into it. Like, and no one.
No, they took it serious.
Yes. Like,
even my least favorite one, which was New World, I was still entertained with it.
No,
it'll still put a lot of effort into that.
Another thing too, right here is, which I'm pretty sure maybe you guys didn't know, was all these ones were done by different animation studios all across the world. For instance,
It was all Blur.
No. Blur was, I think they're financing it.
Okay. Mm.
The animation studios are all different animation studios.
Mm.
Unit Image, which did the Dungeons Dragons and New World, are from France. Sifu, what's the site?
Sifu.
Sifu?
Yeah.
Digitech Pictures from Hungary.
Okay.
Unreal Tournament, Blur Studios, the US.
Who did that Warhammer?
Us. We did it Blur Studios as well.
Yep.
Solarium? Mm. I'm not sure.
Hold on.
Pac-Man?
Okay, Pac-Man.
They're from Spain.
Okay.
Crossfire? Plague? I don't know, man.
Some of these names of studios are pretty complex.
Plettage?
But it was basically a compilation of different small animation studios coming together to create this anthology.
Yes. Yeah. So... But even then, it didn't feel like that.
No. It was all well put together coherently. So it felt like it was just, I thought it was all done by Blur.
Yeah, that's how well it's done. Where it's all, by the way, all written by different people, all directed by different people, different animation studios, but it all came together as one.
Okay. Like they thought they were watching a show that was so used to like House of the Dragon, Game of Thrones, like beginning to end, built up character, transitional arcs, character development.
And it did seem like some of these critics, they already did not like the anthology format in the first place.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's obviously, if you're not a fan of anthologies, you're not going to like it, of course.
So why would you watch it?
Yeah, which I've noticed in a lot of anthology films I've watched, it's always reviewed bad. Every single one of them. The VHS series, the Creep Show, and all, like, any pretty much any horror anthology I've seen, like, always reviewed bad.
You're saying Snoop Dogg's Hood Hollywood or Hood Horror is not a great masterpiece of cinema?
I'm not saying that. But you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Every anthology always gets a bad review because they pretty much compiled as one instead of actually reviewing it as a separate piece.
Just like stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so now we've given our gripes about some of these critic reviews. And like I said, like the audience members are thoroughly enjoying it right now. We're seeing like 96, like 9 out of 10s across the board for everything like that. Yeah. But what were your guys' favorite? So they released the first 8 episodes. The next 7 are going to be released
next week on Tuesday, the next 7 on, which is the 14th or?
On the 17th.
On the 17th. Tuesday. Okay. So then they're going to release the next 7 episodes. So out of the first 8 that was released, what were your guys' favorite?
Well, I think we're all going to agree on the thing. I think we all agree on the first one, right? What it is?
Unreal Tournament?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right.
I will go for my personal, then second one then.
Okay.
I'll say Pac-Man.
Okay. You like the
that
horror
element? That was very creative.
I like that one. And the complaints was the review was, it was too dark and they kind of went towards like the, they took somehow a beloved franchise and made it dark.
Yes.
But,
I love that though.
Right?
Yeah, like but you were just taking out, you know, an 8-bit fucking.
And they created like their own original story. I like how they had that twist at the end where it's like, no, this maze isn't set up for Pac-Man to escape. It was set up for him to be locked in there forever.
Like
Pac-Man is the enemy.
Like listen to the sentence from that fuckhead at Variety. All right. Listen to this one sentence. Though the episode's ending, this Pac-Man one, episode's ending is admittedly preposterous. It's distinctive since it vastly differs from the classic character and the rest of the show. Also saying that Miller presents a dark, volatile, and gory sequence of creepy humanoid Pac-Man who must move through a maze by brutally annihilating everything in sight.
One,
essentially, Pac-Man.
Yeah.
One, the humanoid thing was not Pac-Man. The little ball was Pac-Man
that
the entire
was the
time.
Ball.
Yeah.
Then, as well as, they took what was like, what was it, the 8-bit screen? Mm-hmm. Or whatever it was, the screen itself, which, you know, it was 2D, one little ball, then one 8 bunch of little balls. That's all it was.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow they turned into a 3D, like, pretty much horror.
Oh, it's like own world with its own biomes and everything. Yes. Yeah.
Which made sense if you look at it from the video game and back then. It's like, okay, it seems like if you somehow pull away the 2D going to 3D formats,
That's what it'll be like.
It'll be like that. And that's it is.
Even then, Pac-Man was even saying throughout that episode, even the very beginning, it's eat or be eaten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's the same way with the game.
Eat or be eaten.
You either eat everything in sight, including the fruit, which gets the ghost that allows you to eat the ghost, or the ghosts eat you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you have that statement already of the game, oh yeah, it's a game where it's a you either eat or be eaten, that's going to create at least a spark of creativity of a story.
And I, like I said, it's cool in the fact that Pac-Man really didn't have a story in the first place. So you're kind of just reinventing it and creating your own lore and mysticism behind a simple 8-bit game.
Yeah.
So no.
If you ignore the later stuff of Pac-Man.
About all that stuff. Yeah. But that's like way after the fact. Yeah.
What about you?
But to say that the ending is preposterous is stupid because they're like, oh, so there's just more clones? Well, it's just the same player playing again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The same player and cannot escape the maze.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pac-Man has never leave the maze.
Never.
That's what I loved about that.
For me, though, for my favorite episode, I have to lean probably either... Well, second favorite, I guess we're going to name because we named our top one as
Everyone was like Unreal Tournament.
Unreal Tournament. Yeah. I would probably say Warhammer.
Yeah, that was mine.
Like, I know, I feel like that's such an obvious take. My second one.
Warhammer.
It looks so fucking clean.
It's clean. Yes. It's fucking clean.
I was going to say Sifu.
I like Sifu. I like Sifu a lot. Yeah.
But Warhammer really gives... Warhammer started out as a board game.
Yeah, right? Yes.
Started as a board game.
Tabletop,
working its way into like video game format into now.
Books and all that stuff. It got, expansive.
And so with it came the overall lore of the Space Marines, the Astartes, and everything that came with it. And this gave a look at just how freakishly strong the Astartes are.
Yeah.
Like everything from how they fight, how they shoot, like even the punches aren't even full punches.
Mm-hmm.
That's how fucking strong they
are. But it's even just the mental state of, it's just four men going into this abyss canyon and just the calm demeanor of them just destroying an army and just walking through.
Like here from BBC, at least the creator, Tim Miller's.
Right? Yeah, it's Tim Miller.
He confesses that this little phrase really shows the entirety of the episodes. And it's the phrase that they always say in Warhammer is that we're not afraid. We're not afraid of companies. Sorry. No, it's the... Damn, what's the...
They shall know no fear.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
They shall know no fear. And they didn't.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Especially with the mission that they said, death possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute. You know? And going headfirst into it.
Oh, yeah.
That just looks so fucking cool.
When they go down into the trench and they're just walking into the abyss, and then you got the goblins with the bioluminescent blood. Come on. Cinematography wise, sequence set, everything about that one was just brilliant.
The way the blood glows, I know that sounds weird. I know that would sound, but just looking at that because they're in the darkness.
Yeah.
And so the fact that the blood is luminescent. And the more they kill becomes more luminescent, so we can now see the surroundings of our subjects.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a really creative way to not only show off your engines, you know, but it just looks overall so cool.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. See, I really, really thoroughly love Sifu. Sifu should be its own film by itself.
It has a special place.
It does.
It does.
It really does. But it's like... It's not just story by itself, but even the full setup, the action sequences, the fighting, you can have a lot of those long takes. I know they announced they want to do Ghost of Tsushima. They are even talks to trying to do their own God of War. Sifu deserves its own.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's a cool show that whether you're, I wouldn't gear it towards kids, you know?
No.
But as an adult though. I would say it's a really fun show.
I would say it's more I would like to see more in the style of not Old Boy, but what's the other one?
No, it's like Old Boy. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Old Boy, and what was the other one? There was another one. I can see the action sequences in my head, but I can't remember the damn films.
Raid?
The Raid?
Raid, that's it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. No, no.
But do it in that style?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh,
And no. it's creative. And you don't even, I've never even played the game Sifu.
But it's, it doesn't fun. Matter. It's fun. It is really fun. Yeah.
But it doesn't even matter because it's like, you understand the story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters.
It's that very bittersweet revenge story. What's, like, yeah, you get it, but it's like, it is
was
like,
it
you,
worth it?
Yeah. Is the, at what cost is your revenge worth? Yeah.
Your whole life.
Yeah. Yes.
No, but it's,
there you go.
Dude, what I absolutely loved about that episode was they didn't explain Jack.
No, you don't need dialogue. You don't need dialogue. Nothing. It's straight action sequences and just movement and storytelling and just how the look on their, just the way it's just explained in story from beginning to end.
Yes.
It needed no dialogue.
And we come down to the one which we all thought was our favorite one was, shit, I already lost the name.
Oh my God. Unreal Tournament?
Unreal Tournament.
Yeah. So how do you guys feel about the Unreal Tournament, man?
Chef's kiss.
Chef's, yeah.
Fucking
yeah.
Chef's kiss.
Did it bring back the memories?
Oh my God, yes. Yes. The fucking announcer.
Oh yeah.
First blood. First. Redemption.
Mm-hmm.
Multi-kill. Oh my God.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. It brings back the days of those Twitch shooters, man.
God. That was one of my favorite games.
That was. No, dude, absolutely.
Unreal Tournament.
The Redeemer.
Jesus.
Yes. It felt like it did a lot of respect to the franchise and add more at the same time.
Yes. Especially, again, the beginning, no dialogue.
No just dialogue, just with showing the robots.
Showing how the robots,
rose took, up and decided.
See, I need to go back with Unreal Tournament. I don't remember it being at all focused on any robots. I remember it more being just like the Purge. Like, we own all these systems. They're getting pissed off. Let's just have one day with this bloody tournament to get everyone's violence out.
Yeah. I think the overall robot, I don't think that was an actual character.
So, yeah. I think that's added. Well, because those are the CPUs. You remember when you played the... Yeah.
But, oh yeah, that's right.
Huh? When you're playing against the computer, it'll just generate those robots. Yeah.
So I think these ones... But I did notice that the first team that we saw.
Yeah, like Malcolm and stuff like that. Those were characters. Yeah.
The second team, I forget the name of the creature, but I remember Scar.
Yeah, Scar
was shit. And there was another character, though, besides Scar, with the same species.
Yeah.
And damn it, what the hell was his name?
Oh, I can't remember.
Predator.
Yeah.
It was like infrared. God, that game was so much fun. See, this person who did the article for Variety wouldn't have known that because they hadn't played a game since 1990 on a yellow Game Boy Color. That sentence pissed me the fuck off right there. This whole article bitching and moaning about, this is so dumb. This is so lame. It's too slow. Why is it only 10 minutes? The Arnold Schwarzenegger one was dumb, but it was funny, I guess. And then with a fucking line that says, since many episodes feel so superficial and even bland, this reviewer, close parentheses, who last played a video game in the 1990s on a yellow Game Boy Color, assumes that thrusting together different games into one generic broad umbrella will likely frustrate fans. First of all, fuck you, because I loved it. The only thing that frustrated me was the fact that you had to mention at the very end of it that you haven't played games since 1990s on a Game Boy Color.
And why she said it will frustrate fans. That'll frustrate the general audience, not fans. So her wording is confusing too. She means the opposite.
And we looked up your likes. We looked up your past articles and your top movies lists. Your taste is shit. All right. Don't come at me with this fuck ass article saying how, oh, my opinion matters on secret level and it's not that good. You're not that good.
But even, okay, like she was saying that as fans that, you know, they might not like it. I'm not even a fan of pretty much none of these, actually.
Yeah.
Other than Pac-Man. But even then, Pac-Man, I'm used to the old school style.
Yeah.
So like I said, I'm unaware about Armored Core, Crossfire, Warhammer. I know these things exist.
But you know nothing about them.
I know nothing about them.
But you still enjoyed it.
I still enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah.
This proves that you could make video game films, shows, and not have a following behind it. Have just someone, a regular watcher come into it and still enjoy it.
You hear that, Sony? You do have an extensive IP you can use to franchise.
Yeah.
All right. So before we close off, what is your guys' least favorite shorts that you got from the first 8 episodes?
I think we kind of all know.
New World? Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Felt like a Sunday, you know, after school special.
Felt like an ad. It honestly felt like an ad, like a trailer ad just for New World, the game.
Yes. But I guess. But overall, I mean, it was still a little fun. I wouldn't say it's like
it's fun.
Worst thing.
No. It was the weakest one out of them. I still enjoyed it.
Yeah. I found it funny. You know, he spent years trying to build up an armor and get knocked out within 2 seconds.
Yeah, seriously.
Still has a little message behind it. You know, don't be a greedy asshole. You know, don't be arrogant. Put other people before yourself.
Yeah.
You know, just don't be a dick.
Yeah, just don't be a dick.
There's other things that matter besides materialistic titles.
No.
So, yeah, even though it's like my lesser one.
You still enjoyed it.
Well, that and like kind of Crossfire.
Crossfire, okay.
Like, yeah, it was kind of cool, but again, I don't really get the game. It was still entertaining. Don't get me wrong, still entertaining. But, just didn't really have
much of an attachment to it. It would have been Crossfire, but I just like the idea where both of them think they're both the
good guys. I do like that. Yeah.
That concept where they're both reminding themselves, like, no, we are the good guys.
Mm. Yeah. And I guess it does kind of play because I did look up what the game was about. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense where you have your team against another team. And so both you feel like you are the protagonist of this story. And, you know, every side feels like they're the great, they're the good guys.
Yeah. No one's going to purposely think they're the bad guy. Yeah.
Absolutely. No. Yeah. Unless they're a fucking Bond villain. Or actually, no, even Bond villains think they're good guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the whole thing. When you write a villain, is that they feel as if what they're doing is right. That's what makes a villain.
Yeah.
No one's going to be, oh, I'm going to poison the water supply. Why?
Because I'm a dick.
Oh, okay. Then you just got the Joker.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we want to thank everyone for listening to this week's episode. I'm curious on your thoughts on tonight's topic. How did you feel about Secret Level? Did you love it? Did you hate it? You can leave a comment below if you're watching this on a Red Band podcast channel on YouTube for our listeners to discuss episode topics and various other film-related news. We put out episodes every Wednesday for our audio listeners and Fridays for those who like to watch our videos. For our audio listeners, you can find the Red Band podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Samsung Podcast. And of course, I'll say again, you can watch our video format on our Red Band Podcast channel on YouTube. And before we fully close out, Mike Castle's last end notes for you guys.
Yes, as Anthony has mentioned, all the different ways you can be able to watch us, including heading over to YouTube, youtube.com/TheRedBandPodcast. So that way you can be able to watch these episodes live as we record them. Our videos usually come out every Friday and our audio comes out every Wednesday. Not to mention being able to listen to us on podcast streaming platforms such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Samsung Podcast, and iHeartRadio. And of course, our Patreon account is still up. So for anyone who wishes to subscribe, we'd greatly appreciate it because more subscribers equals more content for you. We enjoy doing this. We want to do more of it. So please send this to a friend or family that you think might enjoy this content so that we can grow our subscription base. And they decide to write Mike Sucks Dick on the screen. And I just happen to do as I was told by going to camera one and showing a wide so that way it could fade to black like we always do. And instead... instead I get just put Mike Sucks Dick. What the fuck? It's some bullshit.
It's a different mic.
Yeah. Whatever. That's all I got. Fuckers. Sons of bitches.
All right, guys. You heard from Mike. Please like and subscribe. We'll see you next time.
Later, taters.